The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We're joined now by Anthony McCallagh, who was in the news recently. Himself and his wife Jean sued the HSE in relation to the circumstances of the birth of their son Owen. Thank you very much for joining us, Anthony.
You're very welcome.
Now, tell us a little bit about Owen. How old is Owen now?
Owen was 5 there on Friday. He's a very, very happy, content little chap. He's physically very disabled. He has quadriplegic cerebral palsy, but he's as bright as a button. He has perfect sight, perfect hearing, and he just loves stimulation. He would live outside if he could. I don't know, it's just...
So how is he's not able to speak, is he?
He can't speak. He can only communicate with his eyes, or he can point. And we're very good at reading him at this stage, and other carers that come in would be good at reading him, you know. But he can't speak, you know, he has no words. And I don't know if he ever will get words. Because cerebral palsy, the part of the brain that was affected in his birth was called the basal ganglia, which controls the motor function. So all the muscles in his body are affected. The signals from the brain to the muscles are all mixed up, so his tongue's affected, his internal muscles are affected, he has problems with constipation and things like that there, as well as not being able to, use his arms or legs.
So he needs 24-hour care, does he?
Well, he sleeps not too bad during the night, but yeah, he would have to be listening out for him, because sometimes he might get the pillow over his head or trapped under a duvet or maybe fall down the side of a bed, you know, so you wouldn't really sleep overly well when you'd be listening out for him. But all in all, now, most nights he would have a good night's sleep.
But during the day, everything has to be done for him.
He can't do anything himself. That's why when he goes to school and we get a bit of care in from Jack and Jill, it's a great help to us, because it gives you a chance to recharge your batteries and you have more energy for him then. Because if you're not there with him all the time, Matt, he's lying on the floor, maybe in front of the television, or he's sitting in a chair in front of the television, you feel so guilty. You know, he wants to be doing stuff all the time, but you just don't have the energy to be doing it all the time, you know.
When you say he goes to school, where does he go to school?
He goes to the Neil Moore in Killybegs, a local school. We weren't sure whether to put him into a mainstream school or into... special school, because he's clever. We felt he might be left behind, maybe, or he mightn't be challenged enough in a special class. But then on the other side, because he can't speak and he's delayed because he can't experience the world like other kids, 5-year-olds. He can't run around, he can't ask questions, you know, he doesn't have the same experiences as other 5-year-olds have. So we'd be worried that in a mainstream class he'd be left behind. So what we have now is kind of the best of both worlds. He's in a special class now with 5 kids. He's the youngest now by a good bit, and the rest of them would be verbal. But there's 3 yes and A's and a teacher, and then he goes into the mainstream class for some of the subjects as well. So it's great the way he's interacted. And when he goes out into the yard, he's a bit of a celebrity because they all surround him and they're all very good to him. It's different than when I was at school.
What about modern technology? Is there any sort of modern technology that allows them even to interact with a computer via blinking?
You're hit the nail on the head there. We have got an eye gaze system from the HSE there recently, about 2 months ago. We haven't got it trained up. Jean had been sick herself now, so she was just getting over an operation for breast cancer. So between that, we didn't really have a chance to get him trained up at the moment. But that's our big hope, that he'll be able to communicate via eye gaze system, a bit like Stephen Hawking. So we're hoping he'll be the next Stephen Hawking.
So I didn't know Jean had been ill. Is she okay?
She's fine now. She's on the mend, but it's just everything kind of happened together, and I think probably the stress of the case, you know, I don't know if the stress of the case brought it on again, but it didn't help.
Because that's not her first bout of that, is it?
No, before Owen was born, she had cancer previously, but it just came back there during the summer, and she had a mastectomy there in the summer, and now she wasn't able to handle Owen. It was difficult for her because there was a lot of things that she wanted to do with Owen. With Owen getting heavier now, she wasn't able to do all those things, so it was very frustrating for her. But thankfully now she's on the mend, and it's a big relief that this case is over.
Before I go back to the circumstances of Owen's birth and why you brought the legal action, which has resulted in this €15 million award to you to help in caring for him as you go through life, how difficult was it for you and for Gina's parents to understand what had happened and then to get used to actually trying to actually live your life with him, needing all of this help and assistance?
You're in total shock. Like, you're expecting a healthy baby. We went out the night before Owen was born for a meal in celebration, thinking that, you know, we'd be parents the next day. And you're numb. Like, we were told, it was the darkest day ever. When we went to Crumlin Children's Hospital, there was a room full of people, medical experts, and we were kind of still hopeful that Owen might be okay. But then when the neurologist went over the MRI and explained how both sides of the basal ganglia were so badly damaged that Owen probably would never walk or talk, it just hit you like a ton of bricks.
What age was he at this stage?
Two weeks old. Imagine looking at a wee baby, a 2-week old baby in an incubator, knowing that his whole life had been totally blown apart for the sake of 20 minutes at the start, and there was no cure, nothing you could do about it. It was heartbreaking. we walked home that day, and it took us 45 minutes to walk home, and we didn't speak a word. And for the first 8 months, we were like zombies. We were just in mourning for the child we were expecting to have, and you were looking at every other family and every other kid thinking, why us? Why did it have to happen to us? You know, and then you were looking at other kids, what they were doing, wondering would Owen ever do that, because at this stage we didn't know whether he would be clever, whether he'd be able to see, whether he'd be able to hear. So we just didn't know, and we were thrown into it, and you just handed this baby then. In fairness, the ICU, they were very, very good now in the hospital, and ICU was brilliant. But when we were just handed this baby at the end of those 2 weeks, okay, there you go, just get on with it. He didn't have a clue. And for the first 8 months, he never stopped crying, because whatever trauma was caused to him and whatever sensory issues he had, he wouldn't sit on anything, and he had to be held all the time. So I was up during the night and Jean was up during the day, and we were like ships in the night. And that happened for 8 months. You know, so it was a long, hard road to get over it.
And then you gave up your jobs in Dublin. Did you move back home to Donegal?
Well, I was actually in between jobs when Owen was born, so I never went back. I never looked to go back to work then. Jean was actually making more money than I was anyway, because she was fully qualified accountant, whereas I had a couple of exams still to do. So at that stage, it made more sense for Jean to stay working. And we were living in Dublin, you know.
And you were both very young at this stage as well, weren't you?
Yeah, Jean was 35 and I would have been 33, 34. You know, so well.
And this is life changing for you, as well as having Owen with this condition that he's going to have to live with all his life. It is life changing for the two of you as well.
It's totally the pressure that it puts in the relationship, Matt. It's very, very hard to explain, because you don't have time for each other. You know, you're fighting over stupid stuff because you're frustrated and you're exhausted. So you know, you're taking it out on each other when it's not necessarily the other person's fault.
The other thing is that to look after Owen is a very expensive business. So yeah. How did you go about then financing that?
We were eating into savings all the time. We were lucky that we had some savings there, you know, but we were eating into savings all the time. There's very, very little support put in place from the government in terms of respite care allowance and in terms of care domiciliary care allowance. And I think it's 309 a month for domiciliary care, and it's just over 200 for a week for care. So you couldn't afford to be in Dublin, and that's why we had to move to Donegal, because to be in Dublin, both of us would need to be working, and that wasn't possible with Owen and the care needs that he had. So we had to move to Donegal, and then we were afraid to buy a house, because you were afraid to put your savings into a house and then maybe lose the case and not be able to get the house sold.
Yeah, you started legal action for negligence, was it?
Yeah, it was negligence. The hospital admitted breach of duty, but they said that this breach of duty, then they were arguing that the breach of duty had no end. Okay, we didn't follow our policies, because they couldn't argue that it was black and white that they broached it. We got their policies, black and white, that they breached them.
Okay, so take us through this. This happened in the Coombe in Dublin, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, so what went wrong? What happened?
Jean was induced. She was put in on a Friday night to be induced. She was induced because it was a borderline decision. You know, there was nothing wrong with the decision. It was to be on the safe side. Our consultant said to us, look, with Jean's previous medical history, we better be on the safe side. Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. So he took her in and he induced her. Overnight, when he went home in the middle of the night, there was irregularities on the trace. Now, they were passed over and said they were borderline. Could they be something? Maybe they're not. They just passed over them, and looking back at it now, they should have maybe acted. In the morning then, there was renovations going on in the hospital. Jean was asked to be moved to the delivery room by the consultant whenever these irregularities, just to be monitored and being on the safe side. That didn't happen because there wasn't one available because of all the renovations that went on in the hospital. Then at 9:30, Jean wanted to go to the toilet, and the trace was removed. The midwives rang the consultant. He said, yeah, for the trace to be removed, but he never intended for the trace to be kept off. Now, if the trace was left on from 9:30 to 11:30, they would have been able to see that Owen's cord was compressed and that he was being starved of oxygen. Because it wasn't on, they didn't know. It was too late. He was born blue. He was nearly dead. He was 8 minutes without oxygen. They say you can be 4 minutes without oxygen and still be okay, but every second then, brain cells die after that there. And because he was 8 minutes without oxygen, we were actually very lucky that he survived at all. A lot of babies don't.
And how quickly did they admit fault in relation to this?
You knew straight away, Matt, because you were asking questions and the whole mood in the room changed. The midwives were looking at each other and they were nearly getting red. And you would ask, they weren't even looking at you. It wasn't, you know, you would ask a question of one and maybe she might look to somebody else to answer it. And you knew themselves right there and then. So a week or two later, I contacted the outgoing master to come to have a meeting. You know, and we met him to try to get an explanation to see what happened, you know, to see what the story is. And I was very, very disappointed with the meeting. He seemed more interested in exonerating the hospital from any liability than he was. We were in that room for an hour and never once did he ask how Owen was. You know, it was like, you know, first and foremost, he's done to the case. We found out what was wrong. It was, he tried to blame that it was placenta. You know, our consultant had already told us that he didn't think it was a placenta. He didn't know that, you know. So we left very disappointed that he had tried to fob us off, basically tried to deter us from taking legal action or even looking into it. And just because I was reading papers from Harvard, every night I went home and left Jean at home, I was looking into it, trying to see, was there a cure, what could be done, you know, what caused it or what. So I was up till 4 o'clock every night, and I did so much research, maybe we might not have looked into the case, and I would just worry that a lot of families are fobbed off and take them at their word, because these families are good, genuine people, you know, and these medical experts, they hold themselves up as this ethical arm of society, and then they totally act in the opposite way altogether. So I would just worry for other families coming behind that, you know, might take them at their word and be fobbed off like we could have been.
So the legal action you took then took how many years?
It took 5 years, and we're actually lucky, because a lot of cases, if you notice when you turn on the news, and there's one every 3 or 4 months, the kids are 10, 11 and 12.
Why does it take so long?
They fight tooth and nail through the courts, and you have to get expert reports. The last 6 months especially, we had experts coming from Canada, from Scotland, from England, from both sides, for our side and for their side, to assess Owen's needs and to assess the housing needs and all the, you know, additional technology that he will need and all the rest of it. So you have that coming from both sides. Then you have the reason that they fight and they don't admit liability, you know. And up until the steps of the court, every case is nearly the same. It's up until the steps of the court and then they settle. Like, we had an expert coming from the defence's side, and we were saying, God, we're well worried that this case won't settle, that we might lose, and, you know, we'll be, all our savings will be gone. She says, don't worry. She says, I'm doing this 20 years, and 95% of these cases, I think I've been in court maybe 2 or 3 times, 95% of them, 99% of them settle, which is ridiculous to me.
So why not settle where exactly you're on?
We got an apology there last Friday. Now, you only apologise if you know you're wrong. It wasn't last Friday they realised they were wrong. You know, they must have realised there and then that they were wrong. So why not apologise there to start? The last 5 years, Jean has been blaming herself and her own body for letting Owen down and beating herself up over the head of it. The stress of it might have caused her cancer. Come on, I don't know. But stress isn't good for cancer, I know that. And the stress that we've been under, and I don't want to sound fickle, but a lot of parents, especially these kids, are actually single parents because of the pressure that they're under. You know, if you had money at the start, it might take that pressure off. You might be able to pay for care. You might be able to keep a relationship going. You know, I don't want to sound fickle and say that money's going to solve all the problems, but, you know, they confound the problem rather than try to make the thing right there and then. You know, they just...
When we heard last week about the 15 million award, some people said, what an enormous sum of money. But you know what? I bet that you would willingly hand back every single cent of that if you could have Owen the way he should have been born.
We'd hand back that and everything else we have as well. You know, even for him to be able to do one thing, even for him to be able to talk, be able to walk, maybe to be able to dress himself, feed himself. You know, how much would somebody have to offer you, Matt, to sit in the chair till day and go to your grave without ever speaking a word? You know, what Owen's lost out on, he'll never get back. Like, that money now, it'll mean that Owen'll have nice things, but he'll never ever get married, he'll never have his own kids, you know. He'll never experience the world the way normal kids have. You know, to break your heart, I bring Owen to the park and he's laughing and he's giggling and all the other kids are running around and you're thinking, he should be running around there with them. You know, it's... No, you can't put a price on that. He also has his life expectancy cut by more than 30 years. You know, I don't know how you can put a price on that there. Like, all the money in the world never change that.
How will you use the money?
It'll be used probably to try to take the pressure off us. We'll build a wee house for him. Owen, because he hasn't much movement outside outside the pool, he loves swimming. He can't swim himself, I hold him, but I can take my cue from him and I know where he wants to go, and he gets great enjoyment and great freedom in the water, you know, and it's the only really exercise he gets as well, so he really, really enjoys that. So it's in the costings of the World Court that we'll build a wee hydro pool onto the house for him.
Great idea.
Then we're allowed to take two carers. It's costed as well to take two carers on holiday. So if we wanted to take holidays, because of all the equipment and all the rest of it, like, we haven't been on holiday since Owen was born, and we used to go in 2 or 3 a year, so, like, hopefully we'll be able to get in a holiday or two now, and, you know, just to give him as normal a life as we can, because I want him to have as normal a childhood as he can. It's never going to be normal, but as normal as possible. It'll pay for carers to come in. We have one girl that comes in, like, Jack and Jill have been brilliant to us now, but that stops when Owen is 5. There's a few of those girls that I would love to keep on. Now, there's one girl now, especially, her name's Deirdre Ward from home. She's brilliant. She's studying play therapy at the moment. She comes in and Owen really lights up when he sees her coming. You know, it's just things they got there for people to come in to give you a break so that you have more energy for them then. It'll pay for all excessive technology. You know, he'll get a wheelchair that he might, because he can't use his arms or his legs, and he won't be able to use them to control his chair, but he might be able to use his eyes or his head, you know. So,
and this is the thing with modern technology, there may be more opportunities available to him than there would have been to children of previous generations.
If he was born 30 years ago, he would have ended up in institutional care, even though it was a small thing. We're actually fortunate. He's fortunate that he's born in this day and age. You know, kids are more accepting of kids they go on now as well, and he's more included in everything.
Does he have any brothers and sisters?
He had a wee brother, he has a wee brother, Daniel. Yeah, he's two. It's amazing the way your kind of mindset changes, Matt, because we were thinking as soon as Owen was born, we have to have other kids. When we die, we don't want him to end up in institutional care. We want somebody to be good to him. You know, I know that's not fair on Daniel to put that on him, but at least hopefully somebody will be there and be look out for him, you know, when we're gone. So, I mean, you grow up very fast when you have a kid with special needs and you're put in that position.
Now that these legal actions are done, and now that that part is finished, now do you feel more confident about the future?
Relieved. And it's a sense of relief knowing that Owen's future is secured, and then he won't end up in institutional care. We will be able to pay for the care needs that he will. Hopefully it'll give him a better outcome because he still is young enough, relatively young. Like, we would have been all over the world at the start if we had this money at the start. There's a thing called brain plasticity, whereas in the first 2 years of life, other parts of the brain can substitute to the parts that are damaged if they get the right stimulation and the right therapies. Now, we may still be... That doesn't happen so much after two, but it still happens to a certain extent. So hopefully we'll try different therapies and we'll be in the best possible place if there ever comes a cure. Our neurologists seem to think that there will be a cure for motor neuron in 10 years, so hopefully there'll be something for cerebral palsy as well.
Anthony McCallagh, thank you very much for joining us. I hope everything works out well for you and for your wife, Jean, and for Owen, and also for your other little boy, Daniel. Thank you very much for joining us here on The Last Word.
Thanks so much, Matt. Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.